Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. Wow, we're on at 11 p.m., Lisa Wolf.
I know, right? Exciting tonight.
Oh, my gosh.
Nobody's going to fall asleep on us now. We need you guys tonight.
We're here at 11. We'll be here till 2 a.m. This is program 226 in the series. It is Sunday evening, and we have some Halloween programming for you. We have Murder at Midnight from 1946. Then it's The Whistler from 1948. Then The Weird Circle from 1943. Great classic radio shows all the way to 2 a.m. And as many of our listeners know, we've been kind of preempted for Blackhawks postgame, Cubs postgame the last few weeks. So we're happy to be broadcasting 3 full hours tonight into tomorrow morning. And we have a very special guest here with us, Steve Darnall, who hosts Those Were the Days on Saturday afternoons, another classic radio show on WDCB. And Steve, it's great to see you again, my friend.
Carl, Lisa, thank you. Good to see you both.
We're going to have a few minutes to talk to Steve before we tune into Murder at Midnight. That'll be coming your way in about 5 minutes. But I want to spend a few minutes, Steve, talking about not only your show, and you do such a wonderful job, and I know you took that show over from a legend in this business, Chuck Shaden.
Indeed.
And it's a show that's on from 1 till 5 on Saturday afternoons where you play classic radio. But you have an incredible Nostalgia Digest. Tell our listeners about this digest, which is available to them if they subscribe to it.
Absolutely. It's the Nostalgia Digest is a 64-page quarterly publication, which is dedicated to the golden age of entertainment. So there are always articles and cover stories about radio and movies and music and the early days of television. And in some cases, columns and articles from people who just have memories of things that used to be one way and aren't anymore. For instance, in the current autumn issue, we have a wonderful article about a woman who remembers playing in the family coal bin. It's like, wow, you do not play in those much anymore, I don't imagine.
Right. Some people listening are going, coal bin? What's a coal bin?
That's right. But there are also...
Was there blue coal in there?
That's right, probably,
blue
yes.
Coal, America's finest anthracite.
I always love listening to The Shadow for that reason, because they say, get an extra ton today. Yeah. It's like, wow, you folks...
Where did they put that?
You aim big. Well, they'd bring it to your cellar and dump it in the coal bin.
Unbelievable.
But we've also, I mean, in the same issue, we have a cover story about Al Jolson. We have an article about the Inner Sanctum radio show.
Oh, yeah.
We have an article about a radio actor that I know you all love, Elliot Lewis.
Sure, Mr. Radio.
And an article about the films of Otto Preminger. Mm-hmm. And even a...
Mr. Freeze.
Mr. Freeze.
On Batman.
Wild.
I heard, you know, Adam West, who is the voice of our other radio show.
Yeah.
Rest his soul, exactly right. But I remember talking to him about Otto Preminger one time, and he said, a little difficult to work with because he was a big movie producer.
Big director, yes.
He's a big movie director. And so here he was doing a television show, and the directors on there, they'd say to do something, he'd say, no, I think it should be done this way.
That's right. Yeah, I remember Alan Napier, who played Alfred the Butler on that show. Apparently, he told the story about, you know, that Otto said to the director, you know, in all my years, I have never heard of it being done that way. And the director said, and now you have.
So, yeah, because they were working on such a fast.
Oh, yes, I guess
it was like,
so.
Come on, Otto, just do your part.
Really?
Well, you know, Lisa has become a big fan of Nostalgia Digest. She gets the subscription now. And Lisa, what is your take on this amazing little digest that Steve puts out?
Well, to be honest, I just came upon this about a year ago. Didn't know too much about it before that. And I'm really excited about it. Not only does it have all of the things you said, but we have become an integral part of your magazine.
That's
here
absolutely
at WGN
right.
Radio Theater. Not only is our schedule posted on there, we also have Carl's new book. He's got a special offer on one of the pages on here as well. And it's really, really nice for us to be working together.
Yes.
Rather than, we're not competing here.
No.
We're all doing the same thing, and we're all trying to play classic radio and all trying to applaud the golden age of radio, and why not join forces and do this together?
Yes, and I know you all have worked so tirelessly on regards to that, so yeah, hats off to you. But yes, it... The any issue of the digest you get will have the schedule for Are Those With The Day show and the schedule for your radio theater show.
Yeah.
So anybody who wants to know what Carl and Lisa are playing on December the 2nd, it's here.
It's in the digest.
And it's small and easily easy to carry.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, and it comes out
four times a year.
It's 3 months. So you get the full 3 month schedule in there, the autumn issue, which is out right now. Tell our listeners about if they order a year subscription or if they order a 2 year subscription. You get something very special
indeed
when you order a 2 year subscription.
Yes. If you, a 1 year subscription is 4 issues for $17. But if you order the 2 year subscription, it's $30, so you save a little money. And if when you order the subscription, you mention the WGN Radio Theater, we will include with your first issue a set of Carl's Twilight Zone radio shows on CD.
Right. It's a $27.99 value for that. So you pay $30 for the 2 year subscription.
Yes.
And you get a $27.99 value CD set with it, which is a 4 CD set. Yeah, you get four CDs. Shows.
Yeah, it's terrific stuff.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, $17 for this magazine is not a lot of money.
Well, for a
it's
year,
it's not a lot of money because it's 64 pages.
Yeah, I was just trying to do the math in terms of, you know, this basically would be a 256 page book.
Right.
You were paying $17 for.
And there's literally hundreds of radio shows that are scheduled in here over the 3 months.
Yes, between your show and our show, absolutely.
And you'll know exactly what's playing. And then there's all kinds of great articles. And I got to tell you, the article on Inner Sanctum that's in here with Hyman Brown, who I had the great pleasure of having a dinner one night with in New York City. And he talked all about Inner Sanctum to me. And you captured who he was and what he was all about in this article is fantastic. But you do such a great job, not only on your radio show, Steve, but this magazine is outstanding. And I want our listeners to know about it. Because if you're listening to this show, and Lisa said this earlier, if you are a listener of this show, you will love this magazine.
I hope so, yeah.
So here's the best way to learn more about it, folks. Just go to NostalgiaDigest.com. NostalgiaDigest.com. When you order 2 years, make sure you mention WGN. I think all you have to do is mention WGN.
That's
right?
True.
And
if your hands are tired, don't feel you have to type in Radio Theater.
Right. WGN, but it'll get you the 2 year subscription, $30. You'll get 8 issues, 2 years, and you will get the $27.99 value Twilight Zone radio drama CD set as part of the very first issue they sent to you.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to post a picture on Facebook right now. We're going to take a picture of us, and you can see Steve, and we'll hold the cover of Nostalgia Digest, and we'll give the information with the website and the phone number in case you just weren't listening to one thing Carl just said.
Yeah, and here is the phone number, by the way. If you don't want to do it online, you can just call this number, which is 773-769-6575. Once again, 773-769-6575.
I'll post it.
Yeah.
It'll be on our Facebook
page.
Or go to NostalgiaDigest.com. Steve Darnell, great to see you, my friend.
You too. Thanks to you all.
It's a treat to have you.
I think we're very lucky to be in this community because you love what you do, I love what I do, and Yep. It's really nice to meet people who love what they do.
Well, we love classic radio, that's for sure. And we have our first classic radio show for you in just a moment. Time for our first scary radio show. It's Murder at Midnight. Came to ABC Radio 1946. Raymond Morgan, Lisa, was a former Long Island minister who left the cloth for the excitement of radio. He was the host of his show. It had a six-year run in syndication. It was broadcast out of New York City. And we're going to listen now to a show called The Dead Hand. Raymond Morgan as the host. Let's go back to April 19th, 1946. Here's part one of Murder at Midnight.
Murder at Midnight.
Look, wait. Come back here.
Wait, nothing. I said you were nuts, crazy. And... No, don't.
I'm sorry, Hook. Very sorry. But I had to have it. I'm going to have it.
And once you're dead, you'll never miss it. Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight. When the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The Dead Hand. And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of terror and retribution by one of radio's best-known mystery writers, Robert Newman. Its title, The Dead Hand. The small studio cottage on Dr. Martin Trent's estate. Seated at the piano, alone in the gathering darkness, is Roger Blaine, the famous pianist, playing as only he can play.
Can't you hear me, Lorna? You must hear me. You must come here now to me. I'm calling you, Lorna. Calling to you in a way you could never resist. With my music, making your heart beat faster, your breath come quicker. Lorna!
Hello, Roger. Am I disturbing you?
Always, Lorna. Just as I disturb you. As we disturbed each other since the first time we met.
Martin's out at the hospital and I heard you playing, so...
That's not why you came, Lorna. You came because I called you. Because you promised you'd come and give me your answer.
What we talked about last night, my going away with you. Roger, I must have been mad. I don't know what got into me.
Don't you, Lorna? This is what got into you. My music. Telling you things I never could tell you in words.
Roger, stop. I can't think when you play like that. I can't leave him. He's my husband. I love him. Respect him.
Can you love a surgical instrument? Can you compare what you feel towards him with what you feel to... Now, this minute?
No. No, it is different. Roger, how can we? He's your friend. It was he that brought you here, gave you the cottage.
And haven't I given him anything? Music like this. Music such as no one has ever heard before.
Roger,
Lorna, listen to me. To what I'm saying here. I love you. I need you. It was you who helped me find depths within myself I never knew existed. You've got to come away with me. You owe it to me. To yourself, to the world.
Roger,
you
please.
Want to. You know you want to. And you're going to.
Roger, no, I can't, I tell you.
You are.
All right.
Lorna.
We can talk to Martin when he gets home tonight. Tell him. I think he'll
understand. No, Lorna, there'll be no talking, no explaining. My car's outside and we're leaving right now.
music, my music, was still with me as we drove out through the gates, down the highway, pulsing, throbbing. Yes, I could hear it, but couldn't Lorna. I glanced at her sitting there beside me. Happy, dearest?
What? I don't know, Roger.
You don't know? Don't you realize what this means, Lorna? I'm playing better than I ever played before, and this is only the beginning. After my New York concert, South America, then Europe.
Roger, are you sure you love me? Me as a person?
Monsieur. Oh, what do you mean, Lorna?
I know you've said you do, but whenever you've talked about it, Roger, about us, you've talked in terms of your music. Roger, are you sure that's not what you love?
Well, of course I'm sure. If I didn't have my music, if I couldn't play, I don't think I could live.
I know.
With you. You who lifted me to heights I never dreamed of, technically, emotionally.
Roger, stop the car, turn around, take me back.
What?
Take me back.
I don't understand.
I do, for the first time. With Martin away so much, I was lonely, flattered by your attention. And your music was like a drug, keeping me from thinking. But now I can think. And I know you don't love me, and I don't love you, so please, Roger, take me back.
No.
But, Roger, can't you see? This whole thing was a mistake.
It was not a mistake. I won't take you back.
Well, I'm going back, whether you take me or not, and if you won't stop the car...
Laura, no! Let go of that brake! Let go of that ditch! Look out! We're going to... When I opened my eyes, I was in a bare white room in a hospital. Standing next to the bed, Lorna and Martin.
Hello, Roger. How are you feeling?
Well, I don't know what happened.
You were out driving with Lorna. The car got out of control and you had a smash-up. They rushed you here to the hospital and... Well, you've been here for 2 days.
Smash-up? Yes, I remember. Are you all right, Lorna?
Yes, Roger, I was shaken out.
Come on. Oh, my hand hurts. Especially the fingers. Nothing happened to her, did it, Martin? I've got a concert in a few weeks, you know.
Roger, don't stop it.
What? Why are you looking at me like that? Oh,
don't worry about it, Roger. Not now.
But I've got to know. I've got to see.
Roger, please.
It's gone. Gone. My hand. My left hand. Martin, what did you do to me?
Roger, I think you know how I feel about you, about your music. You've got to believe me when I tell you there was nothing I could do about it. Nothing. It was your hand or your life.
My life? And what is my life without my music? Nothing. Worse than nothing. A living death. Why didn't you let me die?
Don't say that, Roger. We'll do anything we can. There must be something.
Something? There's just one thing. You've got to get me another hand.
We will, Roger. There have been some wonderful developments in prosthetics as a result of the war.
I don't mean an artificial hand. I mean a real hand.
What? Roger, you're mad.
No, I'm not. You took my hand and you'll get me another one.
We'll talk about it some other time.
You think I'll forget about it, don't you? Don't you? Oh, I won't. I say I'm going to have another hand and I will have one. And what's more, you're going to help me get it, do you hear? You're going to help me. I was able to get up and around a few days later. I didn't talk to anyone if I could help it. Because somehow I couldn't ever look at their faces, only their hands. Big hands and little ones, long-fingered ones and stubby ones. Yes, they each had two hands, and I, to whom my piano meant more than life, had only one. Then, sitting alone one evening, I met Hook. I looked up, and there he was, a small, slight, sharp-featured man.
Hello. Nice evening.
Yes, I suppose it is.
Hey, you mind if I sit down for a couple of minutes?
No.
I wasn't usually busted in on anybody, except... Well, I'm getting out of here tomorrow, and I feel pretty good about it.
Oh? What was wrong with you?
Bad heart. I'm going to have to take it easy from now on. It's going to make it kind of tough in some ways, but... You don't happen to have a cigarette on you, do you?
Well, yes, I do have. It's, they're...
Well, at least I did have it. Silver cigarette case. Can't see.
Is, find this it?
What? Oh, yeah. Where did you find it?
In your pocket.
You mean you took it?
My name's Harris, Joe Harris. You usually call me the hook. This is my racket. It was until I...
You're a pickpocket.
Well, one of the best in the business. But now with my ticket going bad, I guess I'll have to lay off, except like now for a gag. You didn't mind, did you?
Mine? Certainly not. I'm very impressed. As a matter of fact, do you mind if I look at your hands?
Look at them? What for?
Beautiful. As beautiful a pair of hands as I've ever seen. It occurs to me that you say that you don't know what you're going to do when you leave the hospital here.
Well, I just hadn't thought about it much. Why?
I've got a proposition that might possibly interest you.
No kidding. What?
Well, I'd rather not discuss it with you here and now, but I expect to be leaving here myself on Friday. If you'd like to come and see me sometime after
you
that.
You say where and when?
Well, I've been staying in a little cottage on Dr. Martin Trent's estate. I'll probably be going back there. How about Saturday night, late, around 11:30.
Fine. Okay with me.
Then, it's a date. I left him there, hurried back to my room. I wanted to be alone. Had to be alone, for I was afraid that what was on my mind might show in my face. It certainly was a date. A date with death.
A man obsessed, half mad, and his unsuspecting victim. Will both of them still be alive to hear it when the clock strikes 12:04?
Murder!
At midnight.
That's definitely an organ, Lisa.
Which organ, Carl?
It is, the hand.
The hand organ.
Yeah.
That's the organ.
That's The Dead Hand with Raymond Morgan, part one from 1946. We will have the conclusion to Murder at Midnight.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, Lisa, you want to talk about the text-in line?
Because we have one.
We love getting texts from our listeners. If you have any questions about the show or what we're going to be playing, or if you have a request for us to play something, or just any questions about this program or color dye Lisa uses for her hair, or what color dye do you use for your hair, Lisa, or do you not dye your hair?
What hair are we talking about?
Your eyebrows.
My eyebrows are natural.
but we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Love to communicate with everybody out there. So it's great to hear from you. I love to. I don't reply to every single one, but we really do read them aloud. And we love to get texts. We have a Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater. Make sure to like us and check out our photos and our schedule and whatever else we post on there.
Yeah, our text in line, folks, if you want to text us, is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And, you know, we've had quite a few people, Lisa, recently text in that they want us to play more Johnny Dollar, more Yours Truly Johnny Dollar.
We have.
And here's the thing. With Yours Truly Johnny Dollar, the half-hour shows, and there was a lot of them, are not good quality. The half-hour shows, there's only a few, like a handful of half-hour shows that are good. But there's a ton of the five-part, 15-minute adventures. We have a ton of those, and they're in amazing quality. So I have scheduled in 2018 some full five-part shows, which will take up an entire Saturday or an entire Sunday, along with one other 15-minute feature we'll play on those nights. So I just want to let you know, folks, all you Yours Truly Johnny Dollar fans, will have some in 2018 for you. In fact, I did the entire schedule, Lisa, for 2018.
I know. I've been working tirelessly.
Yeah,
We are on it.
All right, let's get back now to Murder at Midnight.
And now, here is Roger Blaine to continue Murder at Midnight.
I did leave the hospital on Friday, went back to the little studio cottage.
By Saturday night, my arrangements were completed. They weren't very complicated. I made it clear to Lorna and Martin that I wanted to be alone. And I picked up a length of iron pipe. The pipe I hid inside the piano when I heard footsteps coming down the path. There was a knock on the door. Come in.
Hi. Not too late, am I?
No, you're not too late.
Hey, pretty nice place you got here.
Yes, it is quite nice. Sit down.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Now, what's this here proposition you want to talk to me about?
It's a very simple one. How would you like to make $10,000?
What do I have to do?
You don't have to do anything. Just sell me something. Your left hand.
What? You're nuts.
No, I'm serious. I've got the money right here, in cash.
I don't get it. I just don't understand.
Look, I'm a musician. I'm a pianist. Or I was until I lost my hand. If I can't go on playing, then life doesn't mean anything to me, my own life or anyone else's. But you, how important is your hand to you? Now, an artificial one will do almost as well. And you can live for quite a while on $10,000.
You mean you really thought I'd sell you my hand? Let you cut it off and getting out of here?
Look, wait.
Wait, nothing. I said you was nuts, but I didn't really think... Oh, what are you going to do with that? No. No, don't. You can't. Some way. Somehow I'll get you for this. I swear.
I'm sorry, Hook. Very sorry. But I have to have it. I'd rather not go into what happened after that. I got rid of the body. Then I went to see Martin.
You don't look well, Roger. Anything the matter?
No, I just came to see you about your promise.
My promise?
Or your debt, whichever you choose to call it. I told you I wanted another hand, that I was going to get another hand, and that you were going to help me. Well, now you can help me.
What do you mean?
Look in here, Miss Peggy. See?
Good Lord. Where did you get this?
It might be better if you didn't ask too many questions. I'm fighting for my life, for more than my life. You took my hand away from me. Well, now you can give me this one.
You mean you honestly, seriously think that I can perform an operation of this sort, do a graft, and that after I'm finished, you'll be able to use the hand?
Why not? Operations of this sort have been done, haven't they? With other parts of the body? The eye?
The cornea, not the eye. And some nerve grafting has been done. But this... Look, Roger. I know what a shock this whole thing has been to you. Know it better than you. You're not a well man.
A well man? I'm only half alive. And I'd rather be dead than go on living this way. But if I do die, I won't die alone. That's why I brought this along.
Roger!
A gun. Quick, easy, painless. If you won't do what I want, you die. And so does Lorna. Both of you, along with me.
You don't give me very much choice.
No.
All right. You win. Get me to the hospital.
Even before I became fully conscious, before I opened my eyes, I knew that it had been done, that it wasn't his hand anymore, but mine. Still, there was something wrong. I couldn't analyze what it was at first, but it was there. A feeling that something wasn't quite right. That perhaps it wasn't entirely my hand. I sat up. The hand was a mass of bandages, stiffened with splints. And inside the bandages...
Careful, Roger. Don't touch them.
Huh? Oh, Martin, I didn't see you.
I've been here with you ever since last night.
Last night? You mean I've been out that long, 24 hours?
It was very important that you keep quiet. You've been under sedation.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, this isn't the hospital.
No, I brought you home with me, back to the house.
Oh.
I thought it would be best for several reasons.
Oh, that's very smart, Martin. We don't want any questions, do we? Not yet. You did do it, didn't you?
What? Oh, yes.
I knew you would and could. And it's going to work. It is working. I can feel it.
Please, Roger. You must be careful with that bandage. You can't touch it, move it, disturb it in any way.
I won't, Martin. But I don't have to. I tell you, I can feel the fingers moving, even inside this. And in another week or so...
We'll see.
Yes. We'll see. Got a cigarette, Martin?
Of course, I have it right. That's funny.
Hmm? What is?
My cigarette case. It was right here in my breast pocket. I must have left it downstairs or at the hospital.
It doesn't matter. I can do it. Martin.
Yes?
I think... Here. Here it is. Under my pillow.
What? How did it get there?
I don't know. It must have fallen out when you bent over. But... No.
Why are you looking like that?
Because... I think I know how it did get under my pillow.
What do you mean?
When fingers learn something, special skill, they don't forget it, ever. Mine never have. Even when I'm not thinking of what I'm doing, they go on playing by themselves. These fingers here, they haven't forgotten either. You understand?
I'm afraid I forget
it. I'm awfully tired all of a sudden, Martin. Would you mind?
No, Roger, I'd like you to get as much rest as possible. There's a friend of mine coming here tomorrow to see you. Another doctor.
That's fine, Martin. I'll see you in the morning. Yes, I was tired, but that wasn't why I asked Martin to go. It was because I wanted to be alone, because I had to be alone. Because I knew now what it was that I'd only sensed before. The hand, Hook's hand, had a will of its own. It had picked Martin's pocket without my even being aware of it. I lay there alone in the darkness after Martin went, not touching the bandages, but flexing the fingers, forcing them to obey my will. I had to do that. I knew I had to do it because I suspected what might happen. And what did happen proved that I was right. I fell asleep finally. And while I was asleep, I dreamed. I dreamed I was walking down a dark, labyrinthine corridor somewhere under the earth. Then...
A little closer, Roger.
Huh?
Just a little closer.
Who's that? Who's there?
Just me. Waiting for you.
Hook!
Yeah, Hook. I said it'd get you. No, well...
Out of the darkness came a hand that clutched me by the throat. Gripped tighter. 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 I fought against it. I tried to scream. And woke up. Yes, I woke up. And my waking was more horrible than the dream, for the hand was there, gripping me by the throat, moaning, exerting every ounce of my strength and will. I fought it off and pulled it down. I lay there, bathed in a cold sweat, staring at it, feeling the fingers quivering inside the bandages. My hand or his, I was tied to it now. Tied to a thing that was seeking to destroy me. Shaking convulsively, I leaped out of bed. I ran out into the hall and down the stairs to the living room, the piano. That was the one thing that might save me, save my reason. Seating myself at the piano, I started to play, using only my right hand at first. But I tried to force my left hand, his hand, to join in. Then suddenly...
No, Roger.
Go on.
That won't work.
My hand now, it's mine.
No, Roger. Never.
But it is. I'm stronger than you are.
Nothing is stronger than I am. Nothing in the world. And there's no escape. Because we're one now, Roger. And wherever you go, I'll be there too.
It's not true. It's not. What are you doing?
Just a little closer to the desk, Roger. A little closer. That paper knife?
No, can't.
But I can, Roger. I told you I'd get you somehow, some way.
Put it down. Drop it.
You can't fight against me, Roger. I told you. I'm too strong.
Martin! Lana! Quick! Save the head!
Where is he, Martin?
The living room. I heard the piano and... Good Lord.
Rock!
He's dead.
Why? How? He was saying something about a hand.
He was in a completely psychotic state as a result of shock and a sense of guilt. The state psychiatrist was coming tomorrow to commit him.
Oh, Martin.
That hand he brought me wanted me to graft on. I don't know where he got it, but I suspect that was behind the whole thing.
Behind it?
Yes.
Well, what do you mean?
You don't really think I did graft it on, do you?
Well,
he was desperate, and I had to do something to quiet him. I splinted his left wrist, wrapped it in bandages, and told him not to touch them.
But, Martin, that paper knife in his chest.
Which hand is holding it?
Right one, his good one.
Yes. And still, in a way, it's possible that the dead hand, the one he was so concerned about, did guide it.
Her eyes wide with awful comprehension, Lorna stares at her husband, then down at Roger Blaine's body as, somewhere in the silent house, a clock starts chiming for murder at midnight. Remember to be with us again when death stretches out his bony hand and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight is directed by Anton M. Leder.
There's a perfect program to play around Halloween, huh? With that scary organ music, the dead hand.
I think you just like saying the word organ.
Oh, Lisa.
Am I wrong?
The dead hand. I'm not even going to comment on that. Raymond Morgan is the host. April 19th, 1946, Murder at Midnight. You need a hobby, Lisa.
I do.
You need a hobby besides this show.
I've got nothing to do.
DJ Cash in the booth there, taking care of our music and our commercials and putting people on the air. Because Lisa and I really, we don't do well with buttons.
We just don't do.
We just don't.
We don't do.
I try to hit as few buttons as possible over here.
As you should.
I turn on the microphones, and oftentimes I don't do that right either. Turn them on and off. Sometimes I leave them on and we continue
talking.
You're
usually just so close to getting it right, though.
Usually, yeah. But if I had to hit
one
the commercials or the music or put people on the, it would be a...
That's it, because here, he's one button off.
Just one button off. Well, look, like when I button things, usually that's...
Just one off.
Yeah, it's one. It's hard to get all the buttons lined up.
Yeah, it's a big
job. That's
why
I have zipper, see?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's much better. What are you going to be for Halloween, DJ? I can't hear you.
We can't hear you.
Did I hit the wrong button?
Just one button off.
Wait, let me hit the right button here.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Sorry, that's my fault.
No, it's okay. I'm going to be Bugs Bunny.
You are?
Yeah.
That's great.
I have the jersey, and then my best friend's going to be Lola Bunny. So.
Oh, that's great.
I love that.
Yeah. Neither one of us can get a date, so we're like, well, we can be each other's dates. So, yeah, there we go.
Excellent.
Well, Carl's available.
That's right.
I'm single.
Okay, she says. Okay, I'll think about that.
She's like, okay, yeah.
I'll think about that.
I mean,
that.
You want to be Lola Bunny?
No, I'll go as Porky Pig.
Wow.
I was going to make a joke, but I won't.
He made a joke himself.
I know.
So
what are you
going to
be? What are you going to be?
I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet.
You don't
have
much time left, you know.
I probably wear my Cubs uniform, you know, my Cubs baseball.
Wow. How original.
He does
how
that every
original,
year.
Right?
Well, wow. one year I did that with you, but I'm going to move on
this
year.
What are you
going to
be this year? What are you going to do?
I have an idea.
Oh, do you?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what's it going to be?
Should I tell you?
Yeah, I want to know. Yeah,
I want to know.
You do?
She's going to go as a Tootsie Roll.
No.
That'd be good.
No. Yeah.
A Tootsie Roll would
it's
be good.
It's a good dance.
Yeah, it'd be good.
No, I'm gonna wait. I'm going to surprise you.
All right.
It's a good one, though.
In this hour, it is the Whistler. And then in hour three, we'll have the Weird Circle. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming film A Wrinkle in Time, based on the 1963 novel.
Hmm.
And
A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah. Hmm. And the winner is going to get a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's Home of Chicago's very best.
I could have used that yesterday. I bought a pizza for my son and daughter last night.
I buy Lou Malnati's all the time. And every time I go in to pick it up, I'm always wishing I had that
$25
gift card in my back pocket.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor stars as Captain Kirk in the new Star Trek film series.
You at least want to know my name before you completely reject me?
All right, who is that actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner. What's so funny?
We're back. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that one more time.
You at least want to know my name before you completely reject me?
Lisa's very giggly.
No, so Tommy wouldn't talk to me, but Tommy knew...
From Chicago.
I was going to say that. You just... Beat me to the punch here. Tommy knew that the answer was Chris Pine. So Tommy's a big winner. Congratulations. I'm so sad he wouldn't talk to me. But he's won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. It's Home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Hey, Tommy, thank you for calling in.
You know my favorite pizza from Lou Malnati's is?
Spinach.
Spinach.
I love their spinach.
DJ, do you like the Lou Malnati's spinach pizza?
I gotta be honest.
You don't like spinach?
You're not a spinach fan.
Like spinach.
It's like mixed but with garlic or something. Huh? It's really good.
I don't like spinach on my pizza.
No?
What do you like?
Sausage and pepperoni.
Okay, this is what we're gonna do. Next time she produces for us, I say we order a Lou Malnati's pizza, half sausage, half spinach.
I'm all for it.
All right, let's do it.
Carl?
That's what we'll do.
Grab the credit card. You're on it.
All right, but right now it's time for the Whistler. Let's go back to June 2nd, 1948, a show called Stranger in the House. This stars Gerald Moore. Gerald Moore played Philip Marlowe on the radio, so you'll recognize his voice. Here's part one of The Whistler.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler, rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. And Signal Gasoline is tops, too, tops in quality. It takes extra quality, you know, to give you extra mileage. And Signal is the famous Go Farther gasoline. So look for the Signal circle sign in yellow and black that identifies friendly dealer-owned Signal stations from Canada to Mexico. And now the Whistler's strange story. Stranger in the House.
Helen decided she might as well be honest with herself. The suspense was getting her down. But if she didn't find out one way or the other pretty soon, something was going to snap. It had been over 6 years since her foster brother Ted had left for the Orient on that government mission. And he was still out there, somewhere between Manila and Shanghai, alive or dead. It was a terrible thing to admit even to herself. But she was even wishing now for any kind of message, Even one stating Ted was dead. At least it would end the waiting. At least it would be better than not knowing at all.
George, please. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Ted's been on my mind for so long now that I wish I could forget about him for a while.
I'm rather surprised to hear you say that, Helen.
Oh, I know. It sounds terrible. But George, it's been six, almost 7 years of waiting and not knowing.
Yes, I know, Helen.
I can't stand it much longer, George. After all, he's my foster brother. Don't you understand? All these years of silence. If they'd only tell us something.
You must realize there are a lot of women like you, dear. It's just one of the terrible things about the aftermath of war, that's all.
Let's just wait, then. Let's not talk about him anymore.
I'm your lawyer, Helen. There are some things we've got to talk about.
All right. Go on, George.
Well, it's been almost 7 years now. If we haven't heard from Ted in another 4 months, he'll be declared legally dead.
What does that mean?
There's a clause in your foster father's will, Helen. When Ted dies, the entire estate goes over to you.
Why must you always throw that will in my face, George? Why must it always come around the money? Every time we talk about Ted, it's the same thing. I don't care about the money. All I care about is having him back alive and well. Now, please go, George. If it doesn't have to be settled till September, let's not talk about it till then.
All right, Helen.
Well, George.
Here.
I'm sorry I blew up. I guess I'm just not myself.
Sure, Helen. I understand.
Yes, Helen, the suspense is beginning to tell on you, isn't it? Almost 7 years of it. Just a few letters from Ted early in 1941, telling you of his arrival in Manila. Then silence. No way you could get in touch with him. Nothing you could do but wait. And you're still waiting, rushing out to meet the postman, hoping each day will be the big one. George is more tactful now about the will. He doesn't mention it anymore, and you're very grateful. And then at long last, the suspense is ended. It's not the postman. It's Rhoda, your maid, walking into your bedroom one morning with a cablegram.
When did it come, Rhoda?
Just this minute, miss. A messenger brought it to the door.
Arriving June 4th, Seattle steamer, President Jefferson, love, Ted.
Oh, at last. Oh, Miss Helen, Mr. Ted coming home at last.
Yes. Yes, Rhoda. At last.
Pardon me? Oh, I beg your pardon. Stuart? Oh, Stuart!
Yes, miss?
I'm looking for Mr. Ted Van Norton. Where is his cabin, please?
Just a minute, please. Van Norton. Stateroom 3C, third deck.
Thank you.
Come in.
Ted, darling.
Hello.
I'm sorry. I must have the wrong stateroom. I'm looking for my brother, Ted Van Norton.
What's the matter, Helen? Don't you recognize me?
What? Who are you?
Well, this isn't much of a homecoming after 6 years. Maybe I'd better introduce myself. The name is Theodore Van Norton.
Oh, there must be some mistake.
Helen, darling, you're joking.
Who are you?
Well, I've already told you. I'm your foster brother, Ted Van Norton.
You're not Ted. You're an imposter.
With the prologue of Stranger in the House, the Signal Oil Company is bringing you another strange story by The Whistler. And now back to The Whistler.
Can do is stand there in the stateroom and stare at him. The effrontery of this stranger trying to pass himself off as your foster brother leaves you at a loss for something to say. True, he does resemble Ted. He's tall, the same build, the same athletic poise, the same general features. But the expression, it's not quite Ted's, is it? That's funny, isn't it, Helen? Perhaps he thinks it's funny in a different sort of way. Perhaps he's one of those people with a perverted sense of humor. a practical joker. Yes, it's hilarious, isn't it? To pull a trick like this after all those years of almost unbearable suspense.
Well, darling, hadn't we better get a move on?
Are you stupid enough to think you can get away with this?
Get away with what?
If this is some crude attempt at humor, I don't...
Not at all. I'm quite serious.
Where's Ted?
Oh, do you have to be that way? I explained once.
Don't lie to me. Where is he?
Excuse me a moment. Oh, steward.
Yes, Mr. Van Orton?
Would you take care of my hand baggage, please?
Yes, sir. Right away.
Thanks. Come on, Helen. Let's go down to the dock.
I'll call the purser.
Wait a minute. Now look. See, passport with fingerprints and photograph. Birth certificate, State Department credentials, letters from you.
They are forgeries.
I'm sorry. They're genuine.
You're not going home with me. I won't stand for it.
Very well, darling. I'll check in at a hotel for the time being. But after all, you can't keep a guy out of his own home, can you?
George, I've never been so stunned in my life. He just stood there smiling at me, saying over and over that he was Ted.
Wait a minute. You say he had identification?
Everything, even letters from me. I wrote them when Ted first arrived in Manila.
Were they genuine?
Oh, I think so. You're my lawyer. Do something.
He'd know better than try to get by with forgeries. Helen, you're sure you're right?
George, you don't think I know my own brother?
Oh, but it's been close to 7 years. He's probably been in prison camp. That can make a lot of difference in a man's appearance.
But it's not entirely a matter of appearance. It's the way he walks, his voice, his mannerisms. Besides, Ted's dead.
What?
Well, something terrible's happened, I'm sure of it. This man might have killed him. Yes, that's it. So he could get his hands on Ted's money.
That's a pretty serious charge, Helen. You've got to be sure of yourself. You're the only one in Seattle who can recognize him. And remember, he's been gone for 7 years. Do you have any pictures?
No, I thought of that. No. Hmm. No, there weren't any, not since he was a little boy. Spent most of his time in the East with Aunt Ida.
Well, where's she?
She died some time ago.
Well, there are a lot of ways we can check on him. The State Department ought to know about him. He's been with them for over 10 years. You say he's stopping at a hotel?
Yes.
You know, of course, that if he can prove his identity, he has a legal right to live here in this house.
I tell you, he's a flagrant imposter. He's not coming here if I have to hire somebody to throw him out.
It's Rhoda, miss.
Oh, what time is it?
8:30.
Oh, go away. I'm sleepy.
I must see you, miss.
All right, Rhoda, come in. Now, what is it?
It's that man, Mr. Van Norton.
What? Where is he?
He's in the guest bathroom, miss, shaving.
Give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer...
Well, good morning.
What do you think you're doing?
Shaving, morning ablutions. Can't say I'm used to having ladies barge into the bathroom.
Get out of here.
Temper.
How did you get in?
Well, I couldn't get a room at a hotel, so I took a taxi up last night. Walked in the back door. It was open, you see.
You can leave the same way you came in.
Oh, no, I'm here to stay, sister dear. I've got the proof in my pocket. And if you want to get me out, you can trot right down to the Hall of Justice and get yourself a court order. Have some more coffee, Helen.
No, thanks.
Hot cakes?
Mr. Whoever you are.
Van Norton. Name's Theodore Van Norton.
I must say, I've never seen such colossal nerve in my life.
Oh, you flatter me.
You're not at all concerned about the servants?
Should I be?
Aren't you afraid they'll fail to recognize you?
Don't be silly. None of them were here when I left. Edward the butler was last to go, I think. Oh, by the way, Helen, whatever became of old Edward?
There are other people in town, of course. What about your teachers at Washington Heights School?
Why, Helen. I believe you're trying to trick me. You know Father sent me to Fox Hall Academy when I was 14. I never went to Washington Heights.
Oh.
Where are you going?
You seem to know everything. Why don't you tell me that?
Helen, we have some talking to do, darling. About the will. Father's estate left all of it to me, you know. Seems to me the executor owes me close to $1 million.
That's a lot of moolah. All right, let's take a break here from the Whistler.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, before we get back to the Whistler, I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a full array of classic radio CDs, all your favorite classic radio shows on CDs, available now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, and they are located at 360 North State Street in Chicago, and their website is museum.tv. And they just opened up the new Saturday Night Live exhibit there. I hear it's fantastic. I've not seen it yet, but I'm going over there to check it out, probably this week.
I know Dave Player was talking about it last night, and yeah. I know he was there with his family and a lot of original cast members from SNL, yep. So it's definitely... something you don't want to miss.
Yeah.
It's really special and really unique and lucky that we have it here in Chicago at
Check
the
it
museum.
Out. Go to the Museum of Broadcast Communications. They have all kinds of exhibits on classic radio and classic television, and you name it, they have it at the museum. Bruce Dumont, who founded the museum, has done such an amazing job with this museum. So check it out, 360 North State Street. If you're in Chicago for any length of time, if you're visiting, you have to check it out. If you live here and you haven't gone there, what are you waiting for? And do check out the gift shop, because our classic radio CDs are at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, and their website, museum.tv. All right, now back to the Whistler.
You knew it was coming, didn't you, Helen? That's the purpose behind this whole crazy business. It's still inconceivable to you that the man can actually expect to get away with it. George was right. There are 1,000 ways you can check up on him. And the imposter himself just gave you an excellent one. You make a long-distance call to the Foxhall Academy and talk to Mr. Rigby, the headmaster.
Why, yes, of course, Miss Van Norton. I'd be delighted to come down tomorrow afternoon. Ted was always one of my favorites, you know. Any special time?
What about 2:00?
Fine, fine. It'll be quite a reunion, won't it?
Yes, indeed, Mr. Rigby. Quite a reunion. Mr. Rigby, this is George Chadwick, my lawyer.
Mr. Chadwick.
How do you do, sir?
Would you like to wait in the living room, Mr. Rigby? I think Ted's out on the tennis court. We'll call him.
Thanks.
Come on, George. Excuse us, Mr. Rigby.
Of course.
You still think I don't know my brother?
No, I never said that, Helen. I only said 7 years can make a lot of difference. You yourself said his general features were the same.
I'm afraid Mr. What's-His-Name is going to suffer a little embarrassment.
You think Rigby will recognize him?
Recognize him as an imposter, if that's what you mean.
Hmm.
He knows Ted as well as I do.
Uh-huh.
What's the matter?
I don't know. I had those documents checked, the hospital records in Manila. He was a patient there for...
I tell you, he's a fraud. Heaven knows what's happened to Ted or how this crook got hold of his papers,
but he's... All right, Heaven. You'd better go and call him.
Hello, sis. What's up?
I was sorry to interrupt your tennis game. Ted?
Oh, it's Ted now, huh?
Why, of course. I could have been mistaken, you know.
Well, can't say I expected this.
I'd be a little foolish not to admit it when I'm wrong. Wouldn't I? Come on, dear.
Where to?
Just to the living room. You can go back to your tennis in a moment. Well, there you are, George.
Hello, Ted.
Hello, George. What's going on around here?
We're going into the living room, George. Perhaps you'd like to join us.
Yes, of course.
Well, open the door, George.
Hmm? Oh, sorry.
Say, what's this all about?
Rigby! Ted! Teddy, old boy, how have you been?
Oh, you old son of a guy. What is this, Helen, a surprise? Why don't they tip a guy off when his old headmaster comes to see him?
Oh, you're looking fine, Teddy.
Yeah.
Good Lord, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Last time I saw you was after the Washburn game, remember?
What? Yeah, at Spokane.
Yes.
Stinky was there, too. Teddy, you remember the bus broke down that night outside of Wenatchee? You and I had a...
You stand there, stunned, speechless, just staring at them as they slap each other on the back. Forgetting all about you. And George avoids looking at you. He's on their side now, you're sure of it. And worst of all, it's beginning to get you, too. He's not Ted, your foster brother. You know it, you're positive. It's ridiculous to go through all this rigmarole. But it seems to be your word against his proof, doesn't it? But there are still other ways, aren't there? Like another long-distance call, this time to the State Department in Washington, D.C. After being transferred to four or five different offices, you finally get through to the right man.
It's most important that you check this matter thoroughly. I'm positive that the man representing himself as my foster brother is an imposter.
You say you were with Mr. Van Norton when he filed his original application here in 1938?
Yes. I saw him attach his photograph and fix his fingerprints. I simply want to see that application.
I'll forward the file to our Seattle representative. You can check it there. Will that be satisfactory?
Quite satisfactory, thank you.
I see. You say the file was forwarded here from Washington.
That's right. I simply want to examine it, particularly the photograph.
Uh-huh. Excuse me a moment, Miss Van Norton. I'll have to look it up.
Well, George.
Well, what?
I can't say that I'm pleased with your lack of faith in me.
Well, who said anything about that?
Oh, it's clear enough.
Look, I'm a lawyer. I'll believe black is white if they throw enough evidence at me. Mr. Rigby was a very convincing witness.
He's a decrepit old fool, and it had been 15 years.
I thought he was an intelligent man.
I could have passed you off as my brother. He'd forgotten what Ted looks like.
I don't know. You might be arguing against yourself.
What do you mean?
You haven't seen Ted in almost 7 years.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
Here we are. Theodore H. Van Norton. Now, what did you wish to see?
Here, let me see it. Medical examination, education record, application. Where's the picture?
On the other side.
Oh, here.
Satisfied, Helen?
It can't be. I saw Ted paste the picture on himself.
Is something wrong?
Of course there's something wrong. This isn't Ted's picture. It's that man.
Helen, get hold of yourself.
Here, let me see. Yes, here they are. Fingerprints. Now, listen. Listen, clerk. I want this whole record sent to the office of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Helen, you've got to have a rest. This thing is getting
That's
you.
One thing. It can't be forged, don't you see? They can't forge his fingerprints.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Van Norton, but I have no authority
You've got to. I tell you, there's a stranger in my house. He's posing as my foster brother. There's $1 million involved.
Just a minute, Helen, please. It's most important, Mr. Robbins, not only because of the money involved. Mrs. Van Norton is extremely upset.
Well, of course, Mr. Chadwick, but you see, I can't simply turn over material like this to
I'll make the necessary arrangements with the FBI, Mr. Robbins, and get your authority from Washington. Will that be satisfactory? Well,
quite, Mr. Chadwick, quite.
Hello, Ted.
Well, Helen, I began to wonder where you were all afternoon.
Oh, downtown shopping. Stores are frightful these days.
Indeed they are.
Reading?
Hmm? Yeah.
How's Dick Tracy?
Oh, haven't checked him today.
It's funny. You used to read Dick Tracy before you even looked at the headlines.
I guess a guy gets a little serious after all those years overseas. Prison camp, hospital.
Yes, I suppose so.
You're looking calmer today. Finally decide on the real thing?
I want you to forgive me, Ted. It's so unbelievable that I don't quite trust my senses anymore.
Sure. You're a good kid, Helen. I don't blame you.
Will you drink on it?
Why not?
What'll it be?
Bourbon and soda.
Oh, you're a man after my own heart.
Mm. You know, I'm kind of surprised. I thought you'd be a tougher nut to crack.
Oh? You expected me to be suspicious?
Well, after that episode on the boat, I expected anything.
Oh. Here you are.
Thanks.
What'll we drink to?
To us, of course.
All right. To us.
Yes, ma'am?
You're in charge of the fingerprinting department here?
Yes.
I'm Helen Van Norton. I brought in a highball glass yesterday afternoon with some fingerprints on it.
Oh, yes, yes. That's the one you wanted us to check against the prints on the State Department application file.
That's right.
Where did you get that glass?
A man is posing as my brother, staying at my house. They're his fingerprints.
You're sure of the prints on the application?
What do you mean?
Are you sure they're the bona fide prints of your brother?
Of course. I was with him in Washington when he completed the application in 1938. I saw him put the prints on it.
I see. Well, that ought to settle it once and for all.
What do you mean?
The man at your house is your brother, Miss Van Orton. The prints are identical.
It can't be. It can't.
We wouldn't commit ourselves if we weren't positive.
I see. Of course. Oh, thank you.
Well, Helen, that settles it, doesn't it? You're beaten and you know it. And worst of all, you're not at all sure of yourself anymore. Yes, that's the unbearable part. Not knowing in your mind whether you're right or wrong. But you still have one more out. Just one. It's a long chance. But you've decided you have to take it. To decide once and for all whether or not this man Ted is your foster brother. Whether you can trust your own mind. It's very late that night when you get quietly out of bed and walk downstairs to the telephone. The house is as quiet as a tomb. Everyone's asleep.
Long distance.
I want to call Shanghai, operator. Mr. C. S. Julian, 28 Purlang Drive, Shanghai.
Just a moment, please. Mr. C. S. Julian,
yes.
28 Purlang Drive, Shanghai. There will be a delay. Will you wait?
Yes. Yes, I'll wait. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Mr. Julian?
Who is calling, please?
I last talked to you in April 1941. The name I gave you was Grayson. Do you remember that?
Why are you calling?
Do you remember me?
Of course I remember you. You called concerning a man, a Mr. Van Norton, as I remember. He was in Manila.
Do you know what became of him?
He was killed in an accident in May of 1941.
You're positive?
Positive.
Thank you, Mr. Julian. Thank you very much.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story. Meantime, a word of wisdom to Mr. Average Driver. You spend well over $100 a year for gasoline. That's a lot of money. You'd like to be sure it's buying the gasoline that's tops in quality, the gasoline that gives you top performance from your car. Well, you can be sure if you'll just keep 2 points in mind when you buy gasoline. One, it takes extra quality to go farther. And two, Signal is the famous go farther gasoline. After all, the only way any gasoline can put more thrilling performance into your car is by helping your motor run more efficiently. And when your motor runs more efficiently, naturally you get better mileage. So there you have it in a nutshell, the reason why Signal's good mileage is so important to you. And the reason Signal says, to be sure of the tops in gasoline quality, there are just two things to remember. One, it takes extra quality to go farther. And two, Signal is the famous go farther gasoline. And now back to the Whistler.
It was a relief to know, wasn't it, Helen? You can trust your own senses now. Ted is dead. Mr. Julian just told you so. And the stranger in the house is an imposter. Somehow, some way, you can prove it. But right now, you don't want to think about it anymore. It's been too bewildering. All you want now is your bed and the first good night's sleep in a week. You put down the phone and start toward the stairs.
Sit down, Helen.
How long have you been here?
Long enough. I said sit down.
I'm going upstairs.
Sit down before you fall down. That's it. You just hung yourself, baby. There's a record of that phone conversation down at FBI headquarters.
What are you talking about?
You didn't have Shanghai, in case you're wondering. You were talking to the boys down at the office. Not Mr. Julian.
We had everything, you see, except the link you just gave us. We knew Mr. Julian paid $10,000, part of the money you sent him. One of his boys in Manila. The boy who killed your foster brother, Ted.
But
I was the only one who knew. I was detained over there in a prison camp, like I said. It was a long wait. I knew Ted had a foster sister, and I knew there was close to $1 million in it somewhere. But all I had was a suspicion.
What about Julian?
The authorities in Shanghai have him.
Well, I guess there's nothing much I can do.
Tough, isn't it? You could have been a nice kid. You weren't a killer at heart. You shouldn't have picked out someone in the State Department. Oh, it took us a long time to work it out. A lot of names. A lot of people. We even drew on the services of Mr. Rigby. When we got going, we knew you'd crack. Sooner or later.
Who are you?
This time, baby, I'm telling you the truth. I was your brother's best friend. My name's McKay. Oh, and incidentally, I'm with the FBI.
Whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Wednesday night at this same time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil, and fine quality automotive accessories. Signal has asked me to remind you, to get the most driving pleasure, drive at sensible speeds, be courteous, and obey traffic regulations. It may save a life, possibly your own. Featured in tonight's story were Virginia Gregg and Gerald Moore. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by Harold Swanton and Mark Smith, and music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. Next Wednesday, for a full hour of mystery over most of these stations, tune in a half hour earlier. Enjoy The Saint as well as The Whistler. Marvin Miller speaking. This is CBS, where 99 million people gather every week. The Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's The Whistler with Stranger in the House, starring Gerald Moore and Virginia Gregg, June 2nd, 1948, heard on CBS. I'm pretty excited because my book, The Top 100 Classic Radio Shows, will be available everywhere books are sold beginning November 1st. So you can pick it up at Amazon. You can get it at Walmart, Costco, Barnes & Noble, B. Dalton. But if you would like an autographed copy, and I'll ship it to you free, you can go to our website and order it. It's only $29.99, and as I say, I ship it to you free. It's a 225-page book. It's a big coffee table book, and it has hundreds and hundreds of photos about the golden age of radio, and we do chronicle 100 of the top classic radio shows of all time. There are 78 classic radio shows that are available for digital download, plus there are 3 CDs included with the book with 6 classic radio shows. So it's a fun book. I know I gave Lisa one. I'm going to give Roger one in my next batch that I'm getting in. Ooh. Actually on Monday. I'm getting a batch of them in on Monday. So you have one coming to you, Roger.
Thank $29.99. Thank you very much.
$29.99.
Check in the mail.
You can pay him later.
Checks,
yeah.
In the mail.
I gave Gloria Jean one the other day when I saw her.
Yeah?
Yeah, Gloria Jean, the coffee queen,
yeah,
who Roger and I both know very well. And I do...
I know her, too, but I just thought...
I do thank our listeners because I've had quite a few orders of the book from our listeners. I really appreciate that. One listener got his book and mm-hmm. posted on the Facebook page
sure did.
That he really, really liked it. And that was not a shill, as they say. It wasn't somebody
didn't
that I
pay.
Yeah, I didn't
yeah.
pay
somebody
him to do that.
Actually ordered.
I appreciate you
amazing.
For yeah, he sent a nice picture in, said he loved the book.
Seriously, you showed it to me a couple of weeks ago and you got the first copy. It's an amazing looking book.
Thank you so much.
If you are a fan of old time radio, this is a great book, very visual, which mm-hmm. old-time radio is visual in your mind, because of the images that it portrays, and everyone sees things differently. But this book just brings everything to light. The actors, the costumes that many of them wore at some of the shows, and just the background information that you got on there, and then the recording. So it's a great book. Great
book. You know what, Roger?
Thank you,
anybody
Roger.
Who's listening to this show would love that book.
Oh,
that's
gosh,
the bottom
yes.
line.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the perfect audience for those who appreciate the golden age of radio.
Yeah, and I had help to write the book from Martin Grams, who has written a lot of books on the subject of the golden age of radio. So he and I together worked on it for about a six-month process. And I think we're going to write a couple of more books, one on the golden age of television and one on the golden age of movies.
Ooh.
So, that's kind of in the works. But right now, the top 100 classic radio shows is available through our website. Just go to WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com, and when you go there, there'll be a pop-up, and you will just click it, learn more about it, and if you'd like to order it, make sure you let me know who you want me to assign it to, and then it'll be put in the mail to you. You'll have it in 2 or 3 days once you order it, so I appreciate that.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight.
It was an eerie sight. It was Lisa walking toward the booth.
I don't walk, remember?
Oh, you saunter.
It is the monster mash. It was a graveyard smash.
You're reading it.
Oh, sorry.
That's better.
He did the monster mash.
You couldn't help it.
DJ Cash in the booth, the best in the biz in there. All right, yeah, more Halloween programming coming your way this hour. We have the Weird Circle and a good Edgar Allan Poe story, The Fall of the House of Usher from 1943. Name a couple of more Edgar Allan Poe stories, Lisa.
No, I can't.
Come on. Yes, you can.
Them.
Come on.
Stop.
You can. You know it.
I know a lot of them, but I can't just
well,
name
we
them.
Don't want
the
you, we don't want you
head.
To. Yeah, I know. Off the top of your head.
Yeah, I got a lot of brains in
you
there.
You got a lot
There's
of brains.
A lot of
There's
information
two brains in there.
Packed in there.
That's true. I'm trying to think. I know The Raven. He did The Raven.
Yeah.
He did, The Pit and the Pendulum.
I that's what Wikipedia's for.
What else? There was another one. Oh, the eye, the one with the eye, right? The one with the guy with the eye. Which one was that? Remember?
Again,
I can't remember. Anyway, his most famous
Wasn't
one.
Wasn't that the one where the guy slept with his eyes open?
Yeah, there was like an eye.
I mean, I don't know what it's called.
Hang on. What? Remember?
I can look it
he
up.
He killed his uncle because of his eye or something like that.
Oh, that was the,
What was that?
Where he buried him underneath the floorboards.
Yeah, yeah,
and the detectives came
that's
and he kept
one.
Hearing the heartbeat.
Yeah, that's the one.
That was Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, that's what we're talking
about.
The Telltale Heart?
The Telltale Heart.
You.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I looked it up.
Those are the only ones I could think. He wrote a lot of them.
He sure
wrote a lot of stories. But those are, The Raven, I know, is another famous one. But we're going to listen to The Fall of House of Usher. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming computer animated film Incredibles 2 and is the sequel to the 2004 film The Incredibles.
What do they win?
They are going to win a Twilight Zone 4CD set.
Wow, nice. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Preston Packard in Kong Skull Island.
Well, if you look at that, it bleeds.
All right. Who is that great actor? 312-981-7200. Talking about Christmas already? We're still in Halloween, and we haven't even had Thanksgiving yet.
That's true.
But you know what?
It's a big
Christmas
holiday.
Is a big, big holiday. Treetime.com in Lake Barrington.
You know, they usually come here. I'm sure they will soon and decorate the showcase studio, and they do such a beautiful job.
We appreciate Treetime.
We'll take some great photos.
All right. Play ball. Celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. This is Hour 3. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Well, if you look at that, it bleeds.
And we have Vanessa on the line, and she's going to talk to me. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Who is that actor?
Samuel Jackson.
Samuel L. Jackson is right, and I'm so glad you recognized him. You are a winner. You have won a Twilight Zone 4 CD set. It is produced by the one and only Carl Amari. It's hosted by Stacey Keach. Carl's making faces at me, and I know you're going to love it. Those Twilight Zone audio dramas are really something special, so we hope that you enjoy that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in and for listening.
Thanks, Vanessa.
You're welcome.
All right. She's a big winner, and all of our listeners are big winners because it's time for the Weird Circle. And we play quite a few of these because they're really interesting. This series took classics of literature, and a lot of these series did. They took classics of literature from the pens of the world's best known and respected fiction authors of the 19th century. And the focus on Weird Circle was horror and suspense. There were stories by Edgar Allan Poe, Robert Louis Stevenson, Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, many others. It was produced in New York by NBC, and it was offered in syndication. There were 78 episodes in total, and they used New York's best supporting actors like Lawson Zerbe, Jackson Beck, Lon Clark, Maurice Tarplin, Mason Adams, and many others. This particular episode is called The Fall of the House of Usher, and it's an Edgar Allan Poe story. Let's go back to July 8th, 1943. Here is The Weird Circle.
Can the dead return to life? Listen to The Weird Circle. Phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal tale, the fall of the House of Usher.
This is the history of the House of Usher. I am leaving it as my last will and testament, because before this year is over, the cavernous tarn will close over the gables of our decadent home. It was written by our ancestors many years ago that when the rains are blood red, the House of Usher will crumble to the earth. There are three members of the Usher family living, two in direct descent, the Lady Madeline and her twin brother Roderick. I was engaged to marry Roderick long before I knew my cousin. It is the custom for the Usher family to intermarry. The Lady Madeline has been confined to bed these many weeks, waiting for death, waiting for the last days of her life to pass quietly.
I have so little time left, Roderick. I must see Charles before I die.
Charles Wilson is tied up in London on business. He can't come down here every time you've a whim to see him.
Oh, this is no whim. It's just a matter of days before I... Don't be impatient with me.
Sister, please.
Oh, afraid of the truth, Roderick? You've always been afraid of me. I can read your mind so easily. Look at me, brother.
Let's not argue again.
You've always wanted me to die. You've waited for it year after year, praying and hoping that I die, leaving you free to inherit the house and the fortune. But you'll be fooled. Look. Look at the rain.
This isn't you speaking, it's the fever.
Fever or not, the rain is turning red, isn't it?
Yes, it seems that way at times.
Each day it will be redder and redder and darker and...
Madeline.
Afraid, brother? Are you afraid of blood-red rains?
The doctor said you should have rest and quiet. You weaken yourself when you're excited.
Where's Dina?
I don't know. I'm not her keeper. She's downstairs, probably buried in that romantic nonsense that she reads.
Every girl likes to read romantic stories, Rod. Heaven help her when she becomes your wife. Call her for me, will you?
The doctor's orders were that you're not to be disturbed.
Call her, Rod. Do as I say.
For your own good,
I'll get even with you someday. Dina! Dina! Dina!
Madeline!
Dina!
Did you call me Lady Madeline?
Yes, Dina, child. Come here, my dear.
Is there something I can do for you?
Yes. I want to see Charles Wilson before I die.
I told you he was busy, Maddie.
Tell Talbot to hitch up the coach in four, Dina. Go to London tonight. Tell Charles I must see him right away. Bring him back with you.
I'll not have Dina go out in this weather.
But Roderick...
Dina, please go. Don't listen to Rod. Do this for me.
I will not have strangers dragged into our family secrets.
Charles Wilson is no stranger. He's the only one who knows the secret of the House of Usher.
I don't like leaving you, cousin.
The doctor will be here shortly. Hurry, my dear, and bring Charles back.
I forbid it, Dina.
If I don't see Charles tonight, I'll be buried alive. Not able to live. Not able to die.
Yeah, we'll never get through to London tonight, Mum. Not in this weather. Not in a million years. It ain't a night for humans to be a bat.
The Lady Madeline is dying. The least we can do is grant her last wish.
Dina! Dina!
Quickly, Talbot, before Lordwick tries to catch up with us.
Dina, did you hear me call you?
Yes, I heard you, cousin.
Try to protect you, child, because I love you. I don't want any harm to come to my future wife.
Please, Rod.
Why do you turn from me when I touch you?
I don't know.
Afraid of me?
I...
Answer me, Dina. Are you afraid of me?
Yes.
But you loved me once.
That was before we returned to the House of Usher.
And you're going anyway?
Yes, Roderick. For Madeline's sake.
Are you ready, Mum?
Yes. Yes, Talbot, ready. We'll be back by midnight, Roderick.
Hurry, cousin. Or else the Lady Madeline might not live long enough to get her last wish.
Did she leave, Roderick?
Yes. Madeline, why don't you confide in me? Why must you call in strangers when you know how it humiliates me?
I can't trust you, Roderick.
Ever since we were children, you've kept one secret from me. What is that secret, Madeline?
That's one thing you never wheedle out of me.
What is that secret, Maddie?
Leave me alone, brother. I'm ill.
You're dying, Madeline. You know you're dying. A secret won't do you any good. Now, what is it?
Please, Roderick.
Tell me, Madeline, or you won't live to die the way you think you will. Tell me, or by heaven, I'll force it out of you.
Whoa there, whoa, boy. This is his house, Mum.
Thank you, Talbot. Mr. Wilson, is he here?
Yes, sir.
Why, Dina Usher, what are you doing in London at this hour of the night? Come in, my dear.
The Lady Madeline sent me.
Great heavens, child, your clothes are drenched. Come on in. I'll fix you some hot tea.
Oh, we haven't time, Charles. Madeline wants to see you at once. Please come with me right away. The doctor doesn't think she'll live through the night.
Madeline? Dying?
Oh, she's been ill for months. Charles, you wouldn't know her anymore.
Why didn't you let me know before this?
Roderick wouldn't let me.
Roderick? But why?
I can't explain now, Charles. Believe me when I say it's important that you come at once. Talbot's waiting outside. I'm frightened for Madeline. We've got to be back by midnight.
You came in time, Doctor.
Lady Usher, you shouldn't allow your brother to excite you.
There's a cruel streak in him at times. Surprisingly like my grandfather. What time is it?
Midnight. Here, drink this. It will give you strength.
Oh, I can't move.
Lean against me. There.
Dr. Bain, you've attended all my family, haven't you?
Yes, Lady Usher.
You've been closer to us than almost anyone. If I ask you for an honest answer, would you give it to me?
That depends on the question.
How much longer have I to live?
Years, my dear.
No, Doctor. I want an honest answer. Please. It's imperative that I know.
I don't know, really, my dear.
I'm going as fast as the horses can go, Mum.
Give me up.
Faster, Talbot.
We won't accomplish anything at all if you lose self-control, dear.
Oh, I'm sorry, Charles, but I've the most dreadful foreboding.
Foreboding? Well, I thought Madeline and Roderick were as close as brother and sister could possibly be.
They were until about a year ago.
What caused the change?
Well, I'd been living at the house of Usher for about 4 months when Roderick suddenly became, well, nervous, jumpy. He'd lock himself up in his room for days. He was morbid, frightfully morbid.
Sounds like a depression of spirit.
Oh, it went deeper than that. Madeline fell ill at the same time. And then the horrible reddish rains began to fall.
Red rain? Dina, really?
Oh, you'll see. The first day those rains began to fall, the rift between Madeline and Roderick widened. Until now, their hate is a living thing. It fills the house. They seem to be battling constantly for possession of each other's soul. Charles, look. Look ahead. There's the house. And the rain. Look at the rain.
Yes. Red rain.
Well, Charles, do come in. We've been waiting for you.
Oh, it's good to see you again, Roderick.
Come in, Dina. Don't stand there staring at me.
It's been a long time since I've last seen you, Ron.
Yes, a long time.
Let me take your coat, Charles. I'll hang it up.
Thank you, dear.
My sister's waiting, Charles. You'd better go right up.
Yes, of course.
I'd better warn you. Madeline's delirious. She doesn't quite know what she's saying. Sometime.
Rod, why don't you come up with me?
He expressed a desire to see you alone.
There's a name you don't hear too often anymore. Rod. The name Rod. You know, Rod Serling.
Rod Stewart or Rod Serling.
Yeah, it's just not a... You don't...
Rod. It stands for Roderick.
Yeah, Roderick. Yeah, people don't name their kids Roderick.
Well, I'm going to go with Harlow. That's still my next name.
I like Harlow.
Me too.
I think we should have a whole
campaign.
Campaign to bring
that's
Harlow,
what you were looking for.
Harlow back. All right, that's the first portion of the Weird Circle with the fall of the House of Usher. Ben the Moretti's, they make a really good pizza, and they have really good food.
Isn't that where you ordered from that time that we had food at your house?
Yes, I did. I had a party.
You had a party.
At my house, and I had it all catered by Moretti's.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Thanks, Carl.
Wow, what a memory, Lisa.
Yeah, well.
Which one of your brains had that tucked away in it?
The back.
The left?
Yours are in the front
and back?
I have four. Left, right, and
then
front and back.
Oh, you have four brains.
Four lobes.
No, but I was glad to see that. Moretti's... radio ad because I'm a big fan of Moretti's.
Well, some delicious. People get to go to your house for dinner. I
know, right? Jeez. Roger's still waiting for his invite.
The next one I have.
I've only been there once, Roger.
Oh, really?
I've known Carl for
how long?
A lot of
long
years.
Time. Yeah. You've been to my place once.
Yep.
One time.
Yep. That's okay. It.
Well, it took him that long.
Kind of
to
private.
Get the thing
I'm a private
up.
Guy, Roger.
Yeah, he's
very private.
You know
he
what
is
I did?
A bachelor.
You know what I did?
You
know what? This is a true story.
You didn't start cleaning, did you?
No, the opposite.
Oh.
I walked through, like, we were taking a little tour of the house. And I was with my husband. We were walking through because you gave us both a tour.
Yeah.
And we headed toward, there's like a hallway past your bed. Like, the bedroom is like a bathroom area. And everything was so perfectly set, like in it, like facing the right direction and like spaced between everything. Dan and I, my husband and I went and we turned everything just like a quarter of an inch each direction.
Just to upset him.
Just to drive him crazy. Dan's like, look at this. I said, I know it's actually like a compulsive. It was ridiculous. So we just moved everything a half an inch and turned everything around. We didn't know if you'd ever notice.
And from that moment on, you knew you loved her, right?
And from that moment on, I was never invited back. So maybe I don't deserve another invite.
But you are absolutely right. I did cater it for Moretti's.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And then another time, I think I had a party at Moretti's too, like actually there, because they have,
You did.
Yeah.
I remember seeing pictures.
Yeah.
But I was not there.
Very cool. All right.
Again,
well,
again, uninvited.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Should we listen to the conclusion to Weird Circle?
Well,
Lisa?
Everybody's staying up and waiting for it, so
all
that
right.
would be the nice thing to
yeah,
do.
This is a good mystery story by Edgar Allan Poe, July 8th, 1943. Here's the conclusion to The Fall of the House of Usher on the Weird Circle.
Charles, I'm so glad you came. I had to see you alone.
Madeline, don't try to sit up. You'll only weaken yourself.
Sit over here, Charles, next to me. You're the only person I can trust, and you must promise to do exactly as I say.
Of course, of course.
Remember what I told you years ago. Remember about Roderick and me. I told you then that he and I were more than twins.
Well, that was just childish fancy.
Oh, I wish to God it were. But those suspicions have all been proven these last few months. Roderick and I are only one person, not two. We have two earthly bodies, but we share one soul. When Charles and I were born, our shoulders were attached. The day of our birth, we were separated.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean you share one soul.
I've never been able to feel anything for myself. His thoughts are my thoughts. His tears are my tears. His weaknesses are mine. Don't you understand, Charles?
Are you sure of this, Madeline?
Positive. His mind has the initiative. He doesn't respond to my emotions. Because I had none. None. I'm cold without him. Don't you see? My earthly body is wasting away. But my soul is not my own. As long as he's alive, Charles, the power of his life will keep me living.
Madeline, Lady Madeline, you mustn't even think of it.
Oh, it's true, though. I'll have a living death. I'll be buried alive. Unable to live. Unable to die.
Madeline.
That's why I called you here. Promise me now, Charles. You'll never allow my coffin to be sealed. Keep my body in this house.
You must rest, Madeline. Stop talking
do
of
you
death.
You promise, Charles. Promise.
Yes, yes, of course I do.
Don't tell Roderick, Charles. Ever. You'll seal me in my tomb alive.
Madeline, my dear.
Every mortal is entitled to his own soul. If I can't rest in death. I can't rest in death. I'll return from the grave and take him with me. You've given me your promise, Charles. You won't forget it.
My promise is my word.
What are you doing standing outside this door, Roderick?
Dina.
Matter not to see Charles in privacy. Why do you insist on spying on your own sister?
Shut up.
I can't understand you, Roderick.
There are many things you can't understand, Dina. Come with me downstairs.
Let me go.
Come along. The living room.
I'd like to go in and tell Madeline that you were spying on her again.
Tell her if you wish. She's a poor, sick thing. Unable to lift her arm against me.
I don't know how I ever loved you.
You'll learn to again after we're married.
I hate you, Roderick Usher. I'll never marry you.
In heaven's name!
Roderick! Roderick, what's the matter?
Pain inside me, crawling like vermin. Help me, Dina.
Oh, of course.
Help me. Roderick! Dina! It's Madeline! She's dead! Here I am, Madeline, beside your bed. You're dead, Madeline. Dead. Two people fought for the possession of one soul, and you've lost. You'll try to drag me to the grave with you, but you're weaker than I, Madeline. You'll never return. Never.
And that was her last request, Doctor.
It's a peculiar request, Mr. Wilson.
I know it is, Doctor, but it was the Lady Madeline's last wish. Oh, Roderick, what are you doing here?
Taking a last look at my beloved sister's face.
Oh. Doctor, I'm not quite sure that the Lady Madeline is dead. Look at the flush of life in her cheeks.
Stop speaking like a fool, Charles.
Look for yourself, Roderick.
What are you trying to do, frighten me?
No. I've asked the doctor to verify her death.
In cases of this kind, Mr. Wilson, death from catalepsy, the deceased often retains a lifelike flush. But it's merely symptomatic. Nothing supernatural about it.
Of course she's dead. Isn't she, Doctor?
However, if you feel the slightest doubt...
No doubt at all.
I'd suggest delaying the burial for a week or two.
As our nearest of kin, I want the funeral held at once. She'll be laid to rest in the family catacombs beneath the house.
Roderick, I gave her my word.
Your word isn't valid. You're not one of the family.
But it was my word of honor.
Don't mix in family affairs, Charles.
But the least you can do is grant her last wish, Roderick.
This is nonsense. The dead are best buried.
But, Rod, your own sister...
No.
As the doctor in the case, I don't feel justified in making out a death certificate for 2 weeks. The Lady Madeline will lie in state in her coffin in the catacombs. The coffin will remain open.
For 30 years, these catacombs have been unused. Look at the walls, dear. Time has encrusted them with nitre.
It's cold in here. Cold and damp.
Let's take the coffin this way, Talbot. Watch out, Charles. Don't fall. Be careful. Catacombs have always been soft with slime and nitre. Hard to breathe in here at times, isn't it?
Where's the room, Roderick?
Ahead. At the end of the corridor.
Are you positive we can keep a fire burning in there?
Yes, Charles. Talbot.
Yes, sir.
Did you start the fire?
Oh, yes, sir. I did that early this morning. The room ought to be warm by now, sir.
Talbot's a dependable man. He starts warm fires to bring life to death.
Roderick, how can you act like that? Your own sister.
Yes, my own dear, beloved sister. There, Charles. Look ahead of you. Tiny room at the end of a corridor. The fire is blazing.
Careful. Careful with the casket. We'll place it on the table.
Center. Oh, all right, sir. And we can place it down.
Yes. Yes, top.
Down there.
I know the budget people.
Rest in peace.
And that you shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though this body be destroyed, yet shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold. And not as a stranger. We brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. The Lord giveth, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Talbot! Talbot!
Yes, ma'am? Why, Mum, what are you doing up at this hour of the night?
I can't sleep. I keep dreaming the Lady Madeline is crying for help. Where's Lord Roderick?
Well, he couldn't sleep either, Mum. He said he was worried that his sister was cold, Mum. Whatever does he mean by that?
Did he go down to the catacombs?
Yes, Mum, that he did. He said he wanted to stir the fires a bit.
Down there?
Hey, oh, wait a minute, Mum.
Later, Talbot. I must stop him. I must.
I wouldn't go down there, Mum. It's ever so cold and night and damp. I wouldn't go down there myself. I advised Lord Roderick against it, Mum. I did. I told
Roderick! 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 The door slammed shut. It's so dark in here. Cold and dark. Roderick! Roderick! Roderick, where are you? Rod! Rod, answer me! Rod! Roderick! Roderick, I can't see. Please, please help me. I'll get lost in the catacomb. Roderick, please.
I don't like these goings on at all, I don't. People dying and not getting themselves properly buried. It ain't normal. No, that it ain't.
Talbot.
What? Are you up too, Mr. Wilson? Don't nobody sleep proper in this here house?
Where are Miss Dina and Lord Roderick Talbot?
Well, I was sitting here as nice as you please, sir.
But where is Miss Dina Talbot?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm getting to. I was drinking this here cup of tea when Lord Roderick comes in a little past midnight. Or was it a little before midnight?
Where is he?
Well, I'm getting to that. He comes in and he says he does. He wants a flame.
Yes?
Yeah. He says, as calm as you please. He wants to go down and keep his sister from getting cold.
And Miss Dina?
Well, as for her, she came down a little later and said she dreamt that the Lady Madeline was calling to her. So she follows Lord Roderick to the catacombs. It ain't proper, sir. It ain't proper.
Roderick! Roderick! Oh, there's the light. There.
Are you calling me, cousin?
Oh, Roderick. Roderick, I was so frightened. I thought I was lost.
Why did you come down here?
I dreamt Madeline needed me. Well, what did you do, Rod?
Be quiet, Dina.
You closed the coffin. Oh, how could you?
Don't you approve?
You were going to drive a stake through her coffin.
She was a witch, Dina. A witch. Isn't that the custom to drive a stake through the heart of a witch? Watch, Dina. Watch.
No.
Watch me drive the hammer through her heart.
Stop, Rod. Stop. Stop that. Roderick, put that stake down in heaven's name. Don't. Leave it alone.
Take your hands off.
Oh, please, Roderick. Please. It's so horrible. Don't you understand? It's your own sister. Your own sister.
You'll pay for this, Dina. You and Madeline together.
Oh, Roderick.
Calvin, help me with this.
Yes, sir.
Pardon me, Lord Roderick, but...
Oh, Charles, darling. You came just in time.
He looks like he was dead, sir. Lying there on the sofa.
No. No, he's beginning to stir.
Keep bathing his face in cool water, dear. He'll be all right. I'm afraid the shock of Madeline's death is too much for him.
The shock of her death? The constant fall of the rain? It's getting redder all the time, Charles.
Yes, it is. That's just an electric phenomenon.
Don't try to move, Roderick.
It's you, Dina. You again.
Lie still, cousin. You'll feel better in a little while.
You're both fools. You shouldn't have stopped me. She's a witch. Don't you understand?
No, Roderick.
Listen. Listen, Charles.
What?
Can't you hear it?
What are you talking about?
Listen. I told you once my hearing was super acute. I can hear a heart beating.
You're overwrought. Suppose I go for the doctor, Rod. He'll give you a sedative.
No, don't leave me.
But you need your sleep.
Of course you do. All this horror tonight will pass over when the morning comes. And those infernal rains clear.
It's not in my mind. She's coming. She's coming for me. I can hear her in the catacombs. Listen, Charles, listen.
Roderick, please believe me that you're simply overwrought and emotional.
I've got to get out of here. I must leave at once. She's coming for me. Coming. She swore she would. I know she did. I overheard her talk with you, Charles.
Roderick.
Cousin, no, you're hearing things.
Now listen.
I can't hear anything.
She's leaving the catacombs now. Listen, Charles, don't you hear her breathing? Can't you hear her footsteps? Her sighs? She's in the hallway, Charles. In the hall. Help me, Charles. Help me, Charles.
Roderick.
She's coming closer. Faster. Her feet are on the stairs. One by one, she's coming up those stairs. Listen, you can hear her now, can't you? You can hear her now.
Charles, look out the window. The rains are blood red.
She's outside the door. Listen. Listen, cousin, listen.
Madeline!
No, sister. No!
Leave the house of Usher Charles. You and Dina, leave this cursed house at once. The rains are blood red, and I've come to reclaim my soul.
Adeline.
And you, Roderick. You will be soulless forever.
From that chamber and from that mansion, Charles and I fled aghast.
The storm was still abroad in all its wrath as we crossed the park to the highway. The moon above the House of Usher was blood red. And Charles held me close as we walked on and on into the night.
Dina, my darling, don't look back. The house is crumbled to the ground. Crumbled into the cavernous time.
Charles.
Little Dina. You'll always be safe with me.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have recalled the fall of the House of Usher. Bell keeper, toll the bell.
There's a creepy episode of The Weird Circle, July 8th, 1943. The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe.
Nick DiGilio, do you want to know the best way to keep yourself warm this winter?
How's that?
I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
It's heat holders.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. So heat holders makes the warmest socks around. Of course, winter's around the corner. They keep your feet warmer than just ordinary socks.
He doesn't like the socks. He likes the Cubs.
That's true.
Socks.
Oh,
okay. Socks.
Well, I think we're all Cubs fans in here. Go to heatholders.com, use the code WGN and save 15% off your order. Receive free shipping with any purchase of $25 or more.
So you know what, Nick, here, 15% off, just use the code WGN.
Okay.
So you got stocking stuffers for the whole family.
Do you have cold feet,
and
Nick?
Make sure your order is $25 or more, free shipping.
Oh.
You got cold feet?
I do not.
I do not.
I do not.
But you might eventually.
I'm one of these guys that actually, I have to have a fan on me when I'm in bed.
Oh boy!
In the winter?
That's not
all
good.
Year round.
That's not good for you now.
All year round.
Why? What's so bad about it?
That's not good.
Why?
You're not supposed to do that.
Who says?
Why?
Who says?
I'm telling you.
Who says?
Why?
We'll talk about it off the air. You're not supposed to do that.
Why?
It's bad for you.
Well, I've been doing it for 52 years, so.
Well, so far so good.
Yeah. But...
Carl has no research.
No, you know what?
Statement.
Seriously. Okay, you can get a disease called Bell's palsy from it.
From a fan?
Yes.
No, you can't.
Yes, you can.
No.
Okay, yes, you can.
Well, you could get it
I
if you don't use a fan, too.
That got it from a fan.
I don't believe
and he went,
it.
Yeah,
from
and,
a fan
and
blowing
I'm not talking about a fan, one of our listeners. I'm talking about from a fan blowing on
I
you
don't
at
believe
night,
that.
Sleeping with
Do
a
you
fan.
Know how many people sleep with fans on?
My wife does.
A ceiling
Everybody,
fan?
A
look,
ton of
Look
people
it up.
Do.
You can get that syndrome.
I want to Google this.
Please.
Google it.
Please.
I know someone that it happened to. And
Sarah, help us.
All right. Everybody's against
him.
Me. Everybody's against
well,
me.
Well, it just sounds
I'm
absolutely
sounds
ridiculous.
Ludicrous.
it sounds like you got this from WebMD. Which
no.
WebMD.
I'm telling you. All right. So, yeah, I know Nick likes it cool.
I do.
Likes it cool out.
I hate hot weather.
Yeah, but you know what? When it gets real cold, you'll wish you had heat holders for your socks.
Yeah.
Because you don't want your feet to be cold.
No.
No.
By the way, there's a very creepy and pronounced handprint on the window here.
Yeah, I'm seeing that. It almost
yes.
looks like, you know.
You know what the weird
know,
thing is,
you know,
Nick?
American,
that was there last year.
Nick, you remember, are you watching American Horror Story right now?
No.
Oh, yeah, it's a good season. That's what it looks like. You know what? I don't like all.
I gave up after
I
the second
the
episode.
I like the first season.
I watched
and
one
I like
episode.
This season, but I don't like the ones in between, the seasons in between.
I, you know
but
what?
That's what
I
that
think
reminds
that handprint
me
has been there since we started here in the Showcase Studio at WGN.
That is pretty creepy looking.
I mean, it's very pronounced. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
what do they have on their hands?
I don't know. It's just
it looks
weird.
Like mayonnaise or something.
Yeah. it's very
like
strange.
Mayonnaise.
Speaking
yeah.
of strange.
Oh, wow. We've got some people walking by.
So
here.
What's on the show, buddy?
It's Monday, so we know,
yeah.
movie reviews.
We've
got a bunch of movies to talk about. We'll talk about the box office as well. My dad will call in and tell a joke, and we're going to do some Halloween stuff as well, which we're doing all the way up till Halloween.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like how, when you say some Halloween stuff. What do you mean?
Maybe Halloween, we'll be playing some scary sounds.
Oh, good.
We'll be talking about candy, and we'll be talking about other Halloween things.
All right, what's your favorite Halloween candy?
Candy.
Trying to think.
Did you buy your candy yet?
No. No.
What do you call those things, I'm sorry, that are like...
candy.
Right.
Candy corn.
No, hang on. They're like caramel on the outside, and then there's like a little...
The white thing in
white
the center.
Candy
those
thing.
Are, those are the bullseyes?
Yeah, those
is
are
that
bullseyes.
What bullseyes? Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I like those.
It's caramel with a cream center.
I like those.
Those are not
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I like
you
those
have
a lot.
Candy.
That's not good.
I like those a lot.
Well, because here now we know what to get them.
Yeah. Most people realize it's raining out?
Yeah, it's raining out. What's your favorite candy, Nick?
I don't... I'm not a real big sweets guy, but...
Yeah.
Like
licorice?
No.
No?
I'm not a big sweets guy. I guess, I mean, Snickers is probably the, you know, the classic candy bar. I like Kit Kat.
I do, too. You know, speaking of licorice, in the gift shop here right down the hall.
Gift shop?
You know, not snack shop, a little snack shop where you can buy food.
Yeah.
They have licorice. They have some licorice in there. Lisa wanted me to buy because Lisa never carries any money.
I don't like licorice.
She doesn't carry money with her. So whenever she wants something, I have to buy it. And so it was $3. She wanted me to spend $3.15 on licorice.
I figured
that's
I was
ridiculous,
worth it.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's,
I don't know the current price
you know what,
of licorice because I don't eat it. So
you know
guess what?
Am I worth $3?
So guess what, Nick?
I think so.
I said no.
No.
Yeah.
And guess what? The next week?
I bought it.
You bought it.
I caved.
Yeah.
I caved. And so is there any movie I should see this week?
No.
No, nothing really.
It's not a good week for
not
movies.
Not a good week.
No.
You're
going to hear a lot of negative reviews coming
up. How about last week? Was there anything last week I should have
seen? I can't remember.
Yeah, you had... I listened on the way home.
I can't remember. What came out last week? Oh, I know Blade Runner's still out. Nobody's seen it, so go see Blade Runner.
Oh, Blade Runner. It's not doing well?
No.
It's not, huh?
It's tanking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right, well, stay tuned, as I will be, to Nick DiGilio. He is up next. I never mess Nick's name up. How come I mess everybody's name
up? You know what? There's
except
time.
For you, Nick.
There's time.
And Roger. I get Roger's name right. And, you know, I called Vince Vaughn last week. That's not so bad, right, Vic?
That happened.
Yeah, you
occasionally.
Know, yeah.
With Carl.
So, we were talking about you. We were talking about you, and I said, you know, Vince Vaughn.
And
I meant
I had a
Vic
good chuckle.
Vaughn.